Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 17 of What's It Like? Did I say that right? What's It Like? My guest is Randall Bennett.
Hey there. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. You're in Utah?
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy couple years for me. I've lived in 8 different places in the last 3 years. So I'm living in Utah temporarily now, probably for the next year. And then I'll probably be moving back to the Bay Area. So
did you grow up in Utah?
Yeah, I'm actually from Utah. My family lives around here. I actually live where I went to college. I live in Ogden. I was originally going to get my master's degree, and we moved here, and I was getting all ready to go to school. And then I said, I hate school. So now I'm not going to get my master's degree anymore.
What were you going to get the degree in?
It's going to be in a master's of professional communication, which is sort of like a hybrid between like a more scholarly communication degree and then a more businessy MBA. So it was kind of in the middle for me.
All right. Well, let's see, Utah. Let me guess the questions people ask you. Are you Mormon?
Yes.
Do you know the Osmonds?
No.
And do you know Orrin Hatch?
No. I have met him before. I guess I've met him before, but I don't know him. So
are those the questions people ask you?
Usually there's a snowboarding or skiing question.
I miss skiing. How could I forget that?
Yeah.
Particularly in Ogden, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So.
All right. Well, so you grew up in Utah.
Yep.
From your experience of what's it like being a child?
You know, I think I had kind of a semi-unique, at least for Utah, upbringing. My dad's from New Jersey and my mom's from Idaho. And my dad is he wasn't raised Mormon, and my mom was. Like, her family's been Mormon for like tons of generations, so I kind of have this eclectic mix of a little bit more diversity in that my dad is from the East Coast and he's a very loud guy, and my mom's very quiet from Idaho and very like rural. So it's definitely like it's something that's flavored my outlook on life and how I've pursued my career. And you know, I like to think of myself as I don't know, scatterbrained maybe is the right word. I have a lot of interests, and I have explored a lot of different things. So I think a lot of it has to do with that. You know, I have good family values, and my family, we love each other, and you know, all that stuff. But at the same time, like, I'm really interested in trying to make a dent in the world and trying to, you know, I know the world extends outside of the bubble of Utah. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, how did your parents impact your worldview?
I mean, really, like, they would describe themselves as like really conservative, but I think like when it comes right down to it, they just want to do what's best. And for me, like, that's something that felt a little bit of it felt contrasting for me. Like, a lot of my friends, you know, like, they lived in Utah their whole lives, and their whole sort of, I don't know, their whole experience revolved around this idea of, you know, growing up in I moved from Ogden, which is like an okay sized town, to a smaller town, which is in southern Utah, called St. George. And that was when I was about 11. So people in St. George kind of had this idea that your world kind of revolves around St. George. And if not St. George, then Vegas, which is 2 hours away, or Salt Lake. And for me, like, I was never about, like, it was never about like regionality for me. Like, all I wanted to do is just create interesting things that change the world. I mean, that sounds sort of hyperbolic, but like, that's really how I view life. Like, all I want to do is like do something that helps everyone, you know, in society, like, look at things differently. And for me, like, that doesn't happen in one region of the country or the other. And it doesn't happen in populous cities or small cities. It happens everywhere. And so, like, you know, my parents kind of instilled that, like, a little bit of a different outlook on life. And while most of my family stayed in Utah, one of my brothers and I, we've, you know, he lived in a lot of different places working in television news, and I lived in a lot of places working in technology journalism. So it's kind of those two, like, we broke the mold, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So did you go on mission?
Yeah, I did. I went to Florida.
Florida.
Yep.
So did that help expand your worldview or narrow it?
It was good. I think, like, LDS mission is something that's very – LDS is a short code for Mormon. So that it's a very different experience for everyone. I mean, for me, it was like, you know, a lot of it's about, like, why you're going to go on a mission. And a lot of, you know, 19 – you go and you're 19. And so a lot of 19-year-olds are like, I have no idea what the world's like. I had some prior experiences that kind of flavored things a little bit differently for me. My sister had died from cancer when I was 15. And so I had this, you know, I grew up pretty quickly. And I got my associate's degree when I was 17. So I had like finished a lot of college already. And by the time I went on my mission when I was 19, I looked at it a little bit differently. Like I think I looked at it more of like, I don't know, like I was going out to meet a lot of different people and just experience the world, you know? And some people would do the same thing backpacking through Europe. I just happened to go to Florida and just talk to random people all day, every day. And, you know, that meeting lots of different people from, you know, people who are nothing like you to people who are pretty much the same as you. Like that was it, you know, it made it really easy for me to talk to people and, you know, experience wise, like a lot of my, the things I'm good at in business and in journalism primarily stem from my complete lack of shame of talking to anyone. And I, you know, I feel very comfortable talking to, you know, anyone from, you know, the CEO of a company to like the janitor at a company and feeling like I can still, like there were something. Mm-hmm. Everyone has something to add. And you just have to like, some people you have to nudge a little bit more than others, but like, you know, everyone will tell you something interesting. So
did you have a major challenge in school?
My major challenge in school is kind of weird. I mean, like I said, I got my associate's degree when I was 17. So I was like halfway done with college when I started. And I went to college for a year, then went on my mission and then came back. When I initially went to college, the hardest thing for me was like, I had no time to pick a major. Like I had like literally a week. So I showed up to school as an art major and I went to classes for a week. And I just was like, this is so awful. Like I'm not good at drawing, but I'm really good at computer art, specifically like motion graphic design. I just couldn't do like charcoal drawing every day. And it was awful. So one of my biggest challenges was really like figuring out what my major was going to be. And, you know, like I had to commit to something for 2 years that I had a week to think about. And luckily I picked correctly. So I ended up majoring in communication, which was my minor. And the only reason why I didn't major in communication in the first place is because my brother did it. And I was like, I don't want to be like my brother. I want to be different and unique and interesting. And turns out like,
want to be yourself.
Exactly. And it turned out for me that like, I love telling stories. I love understanding stories. I love interacting with people. I mean, those are all things that communication is like the degree is predicated on. And I just, I instantly, like I would go to my media writing class in the morning and then I would go to my art classes and I would just like, it was such an imbalance in that 1 week. I was like, I have to do something or else I'm going to go crazy. So, yeah.
If you hadn't gone into technology, what would you have done?
You know, like, honestly, that is a really hard question. Just cause like, for me, there was never a question of like, I was not going to go into technology. Like ever since I was like three, like we've had an Apple II my entire life, or an Apple II like since before I was born. And like my brother taught me how to program when I was four, cause I had learned how to read. And he's like, well, if you know how to read, you know how to think. So here's basic programming. And, like that sort of like set the stage for, you know, my entire career and my entire life. For me, it was like, do I want to be a video producer? Like I used to work in TV news and I worked for big companies like ESPN and TNT doing sports production. So like watching a sporting event, I did stuff behind the scenes there. And when I worked in local news, it was like, I don't want to talk about like a dumpster fire or like a car accident. Like I don't care about any of that stuff. So I always knew that like I was kind of going towards technology because it's, you know, like I would read blogs all day, every day before they were called blogs. Like all I would do is like read about gaming or technology. And so, you know, for me, like the only other thing I might've done is like be a commercial video producer, but even that still is like super gadgety. And you know, I always would want to find like the coolest computer and all that stuff. Right. So
would you have got into films or directing or?
I like television. Like I said before, I have a like sporadic personality or a very like ADD style personality. So I definitely don't like working on long projects and television, even television commercials and television news and, you know, like show production, like if you did like a game show or something, all of those things have like a really short time from, you know, piece to piece, right? So like each show is a day and you do your show and then you go home and you're happy. That I really liked that about television production and film production. I just like, I love the artisan idea of like crafting how the lighting looks, but I just get impatient. You know, yes. I just can't deal with that like drawn out. Like, I can't imagine spending 4 years on a 2-hour movie, you know, like that's just insane to me. So, I definitely like television. I just identify with television better.
So maybe 2 hours in a 4-year movie, but not the other way around.
Huh? Exactly.
What exactly do you do?
Well, so right now I work for a company called Castfire. It's a video platform. So we work with companies like ESPN Radio and ABC Radio and CBS Interactive. We power podcasts and video.
What does that mean?
We're kind of like a private label YouTube, right? Like, we handle all the transcoding, all the storage, all the servers, ad insertion, like all that stuff. It sounds really like non-artistic. And I know that that's kind of weird because, my heart and soul is in like creation. But the thing about this job for me is like, I'm an account manager, which means I'm interfacing with people, which I like doing. But I'm learning about startups, and like, I've been a part of startups, you know, right after I finished my career in TV news, which was like a whole year or something. I was like, I went and started working for startups. And so since then I've worked with, you know, a bunch of different startups that are at a bunch of different stages. And for me, working at Castfire, it's all about like learning the intricacies of how a company runs, and like how a company runs that only has 4 people, you know, or like how, what are the problems that we run into, or like, what are the solutions that what do we do really well and what do we do really poorly?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why I like the job, is because I kind of get this good level of experience in, and I can do a wider range of things, right? Like, I'm an account manager, but like I develop, like I'm building software to do stuff. And, having that sort of diverse job description is helpful for me, just because it makes my job not boring, but also I can continue to learn. I mean, really, I know that where I'm going to end up is I'm going to start a company at some point. It's going to, you know, my goal is going to be to like really make a dent in the world, specifically with video production. So like, working at Castfire right now, I can learn a lot of the operational and sort of startup issues, and it really doesn't focus on like, you know, the creation of a craft or anything, right? But like, having those like operational issues kind of under my belt is what I really like about it.
What has surprised you about your job?
Really, like, how many startups are similar. Like, a lot of startups do a lot of the same they make a lot of the same mistakes. They just make them in different ways. So like, you know, not communicating is a huge example of like,
you mean within itself?
Exactly. Yeah, like not like having, you know, 4 employees and still struggling with communication, you know. But like, your incorporations that have, you know, I worked at CNET, and CNET is a huge company. It was public at the time. Like, all of the, you know, we couldn't communicate well. We couldn't communicate well in our team, which is, you know, we had people in New York and San Francisco, and we couldn't communicate well in an organization. So like, that thing, like that problem scales all the way down to 4 people, you know? So, I guess we're like 6-7 people, whatever, under 10 people, that problem scales down to. And
it may be just more than one.
Yeah, exactly. If you have an idea that you need to share with someone, like, you need to figure out how to share it effectively, or else you'll be slow. Like, that's what it really comes down to. And I think I figured out some ways to address that problem. And I've worked, you know, I'm not a founder of this company. I'm not a CEO. So I can't, you know, it's not my place to like change everything. But I do, you know, as a small company, like, I do have a large amount of influence, and I'm trusted. So I'm able to like implement little things here and there. You know, starting my own companies in the past, that's like the main thing I focus on is communication. Like, I had started a company called TechV maybe like 3 years ago. It didn't really get any traction, which was okay. It was just like a really fun learning experience. But
it did kind of tech news.
Yeah, it was like tech news, a daily tech news show. It was sort of like, if you've watched ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, or Around the Horn, it was sort of like that style of show for technology with like a lot of different tech journalists. Right. We also had a website where we'd have people write, and I was able to actually get a team. Like, I think I had a team of maybe like, I want to say like 12 to 15 writers at one point. And, you know, they were writing really small chunks, and they weren't like journalists. So a lot of it, you know, wasn't good, frankly, but like, the one thing that I was able to do is communicate with a lot of them on a broad scale. And everyone felt like they knew what was going on, and everyone felt like they were up to date. And that was really a chance for me to kind of like start to tackle that problem. And I wasn't perfect. And a lot of the stuff that I'm doing at Castfire is a result of that. And even before that, I had a company called Obsessible, and we had a team of about 40 people. And I was really bad at communication there. So that was like the start of my like analysis of inter-team communication and making it strong. So, yeah, I mean, like, that's definitely been the most surprising thing, though, is that, like, everyone is bad at communication.
So when you are good at communication, what does that look like?
It's just, like, knowing where to look or where to turn or how to get the right question answered, right? I think there's a lot of really interesting services that are coming out that are addressing this, specifically, like, Asana is one, or Opsy. Those are two, like, companies you've never heard of that they're looking at this idea of, like, How do you share knowledge in a company, and how do you efficiently like answer the same question over and over? For me, like the systems that like I use to sort of effectively communicate, like a wiki, right? Like an internal company thing that anyone can edit. That works really effectively. If you answer a question more than once from more than one person, it goes in the wiki. And like you have a very clear onboarding process, right? Like when someone comes to work for you, like making sure that they understand what systems you use, how you like do things. And like that needs to scale, right? Like you can't spend an inordinate amount of time teaching each employee the basics because you have other things to do. And so having like a really efficient onboarding process of like, okay, you come in, you read these 20 things tell you about these 20 other things, and then you learn about those 20 other things. And then knowing that like that's your starting point for understanding anything in the company, you know? So like if someone doesn't understand something, you adjust that onboarding process constantly to make it so that like anyone who comes into the organization can read like a style guide or, you know, a best practices thing or just anything to get up to speed in the shortest amount of time as possible without like shortchanging them, you know? So it's, you know, those are like, to me, if you fix those problems early, like those are the biggest ones, and they tend to be the hairiest, right? The other ones that are like really obvious, mm-hmm. like weekly team meeting that is, you know, not just like reading slides. So like a lot of companies that I've been a part of, they'll have a team meeting and then they'll have like a bunch of slides and they'll literally like go over each slide. And it's like, I can read, like I'm skilled at like visual, like staring at stuff. So figuring out how to take those like weekly meetings are important because they build rapport and like do a lot of other things that are crucial to like keep teams working. But figuring out ways to like have them be super effective, right? Like, so they're not just like reading slides, so that like there's actual discussion and like people like hearing about what other people's ideas are, and they stimulate conversation and ideas. Like those are like, if you can do those two things right, not having status meetings where you just like read slides and then like onboarding your employees correctly, those are like, I swear those eliminate like 90% of communication bottlenecks. And like other stuff too that is sort of more pedestrian, but like having a company like email culture. So figuring out like what's okay to email about, what's okay to call about, and like what should just be like figured out on your own. And that's not something you can like write down in a document, but you know, consciously thinking about that, like consciously thinking like, okay, how do I make it so that everyone else doesn't get blocked from doing their job because they're talking to everyone all the time? You know? But then like also, how do I make it so other people can do their job by talking effectively to each other? You know, so these are all like, I mean, obviously I'm a huge communication nerd. These are things I think about all day, every day. And I'm always like trying to figure out the best way to do it. So
we'll have more with Randall Bennett right after I remind you of the importance of health. CFIDS, C-F-I-D-S, stands for Chronic Fatigue and Immune Dysfunction Syndrome. It's a complex disorder that impacts many parts of the body. It's more than just being tired. It's having your life devastated. My daughter went to Nicaragua after her sophomore year in Harvard. She volunteered in an orphanage and came home with a flu-like condition, which turned into an autoimmune disorder. And she went from being very active to bedridden. She's been sick for 11 years, and there's no cure for her condition. But new research on retroviruses gives some hope, so please, go to cfids.org and click on donate. cfids.org. Thanks very much. So, Randall, Everybody has to give themselves a kick in the pants occasionally.
Yep.
How do you give yourself self-motivation?
It's hard. Self-motivation is one of those things I struggle with a lot. You know, when I work for myself, I find that it's really simple to be self-motivated because it's easy to analyze like where you're at when you're building a business and like where you need to be. And then, you know, if you're not making millions of dollars, you're saying like, okay, I haven't succeeded yet, you know? So it's really easy to kind of like push yourself. When I'm working for other people, I find like that's one of my like hardest issues. Like, how do I motivate myself? How do I like keep going? And a lot of times it just comes to like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? And, you know, if I'm really frustrated because, you know, not with the company I'm at now, but with other companies I've been where like, you know, my boss, I'll need to talk to them and they'll be super busy and it'll be really hard for me to like get in touch with them to continue working on my project. And it kind of like is this chain of like self-defeating, right? I'm like, oh, I can't keep going on this project. So like, I can't keep going my job. Oh, I hate my job so much. You know, it's like this feeling. So what I normally do is just like reevaluate. Like when I get to that point where I'm like, okay, I could just play video games all day instead of working. Like, what do I do? I kind of just say like, well, what do I actually want to get out of this? And then how do I get that thing that I want to get out of it without in the constraints that I have? Mm-hmm. So at my current job, that means like, you know, how do I either learn to manage better or how do I understand the problems of a startup? And usually the answer is just like do something that needs to get done, you know? So like that's where like I'll take on a coding project that like just hasn't gotten done because of a lack of time. And I'll be like, okay, I'll just do this because no one else is getting it done, you know? And that kind of motivates me. So it's really just like a constant evaluation of like where I'm at now and where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And when you work when you work for yourself, that's really easy to do. And when you're working for someone else, it's really hard to do.
So it's helpful for you to have multiple projects. So you can, if you get stopped on one and you need to talk to your boss about something that you can't go further on it, you need to have another project that you could go work on.
Yeah.
To take over.
Exactly. Yeah. Like juggling that, like having that juggling act is something that I need because I hate, I absolutely hate more than anything not doing anything. Like I haven't taken a proper vacation probably like ever. And it's not because I'm a workaholic necessarily. It's just because I like to be doing stuff.
Right.
So if I take a vacation, it's like, okay, I'm going to take a vacation. And my goal for that vacation is going to be to like, you know, when we had a kid like 2 months ago, I'm a new parent. And like when we had our kid, I was like, okay, I'm not going to go to work because I'm going to like learn what it's like to be a dad. You know, sometimes I kind of lose being in the moment because I'll be like, oh, well, I have this very specific goal and I want to like, you know, accomplish it. But at the same time, like when stuff does block, you know, stuff always gets blocked all the time, whether like a client doesn't get back to you or whatever, having that other thing to go back to, like that's super, that it keeps me feeling productive and it keeps me like satisfied in my job or in just life. Right. Like, so I had this period between the end of college and before I went on my mission. It was probably like 2 or 3 months. And that was awful because I couldn't get a job. I couldn't do anything. Okay. I just had to like sit there and be content. And I ended up going and like doing a fake internship at a TV station because I was like, well, I don't want to do nothing. So I just went to the general manager and I was like, hey, I'm smart. I'll work for you for free if you just let me for 2 months. And they're like, all right. So I just went and I did that for like 2 months and I really loved it, you know? And I felt satisfied in my life. I was making progress. I did learn things. Like that TV station was kind of like a startup in itself. So that was like the first taste of startups that I really had. But, you know, having each of those projects, it's like you can always go back and be entertained by something or like do something. So,
and when you have to calm yourself, how do you soothe?
A lot of meditation. Like I really do. You know, prayer is big for me. Like I'm very religious, and prayer is a huge part of it. Like I listen to classical music. I really like classical music a lot, which is kind of weird. I use Ardio, which is this website, and every week it publishes to my Facebook like what music I listen to the most. And some weeks it's like Bach, 50 Cent, you know, like these really like disparate weird tastes. And this week, actually, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir was the second thing I listened to the most. And I was like, wow, it's kind of embarrassing. I feel kind of weird telling everyone that I listen to this music. But it really does help me kind of like get in this like chill state. It just, it makes me chill. And like, it makes me kind of like, you know, get out of those really low lows and really high highs. Yeah. So.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Definitely. I mean, two. So the two that have challenged me the most are, like I said, my sister died when I was 14, 15. And then my brother was killed in a car wreck when I was 22. And it was my brother that I mentioned earlier who was did TV news. I have two brothers. So my brother Rick and my brother Ryan. So my brother Ryan, him and I are basically the same person in like a ton of ways. Like we're both really personable. He started a website that got bought, and it was like he was doing podcasting in 2000, which was like unheard of. it wasn't called podcasting. It was called, I don't know what you called it, but he had a website called MMA Weekly, which is about Ultimate Fighting. And he really succeeded a lot in that. And when he died, it was really hard for me. I was living in New York and I was living far away from everyone I knew. And like, I didn't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't deal with it for maybe like a year or more. And, you know, in that time I just kind of was like on autopilot, and I moved back to Utah. I lived with my sister for a bit and made sure that she was going, like, it was hard for her too. Like we were all really close. And, so after that, I kind of like, I again had to evaluate like, who am I? Like, what am I doing? And like, why was I living in New York? What was I doing there? And I worked for AOL and I was doing some stuff and it was fine. But I wanted to figure out like, okay, what's next? And that kind of put me on the current path that I'm on. I mean, I'd previously worked for Engadget, so like it wasn't a completely like new step. But I started doing this show called Tech Check Daily, which was just this like daily show. And for me, it was this, it became cathartic. Like I lost myself in work, which happens too often for me, I think. Like I was sad and I didn't want to deal with emotions. So I just like, I used work as like an outlet, and it was really nice. Like I felt like, you know, he died in June, and I moved back to Utah in August, and until October, I pretty much was depressed, like in every definition. Like it was awful. I hated my job. I hated, you know, life was just hard. I was crying all the time because, man, my brother died and it was just really rough. And then on top of it, I was like, why? Like, was what I did, was I going the direction that I wanted to go? And in October, I said, all of a sudden, I decided, like, I met with a psychologist like once and I was like, okay, well, like it helped me kind of set a perspective. And then I just was like, you know, I'm going to get closer to my career goals. And at the time my career goal was like, I wanted to be on CNN to be a tech reporter. And so I was like, well, my current job isn't getting me anywhere near that. So I'm just going to start doing this other stuff. And it, you know, that sort of started the healing process for me. And like, it redefined like who I am. And, you know, it made, like, as weird as it sounds, like my brother's death made life easier. Like, mm-hmm. I'll get depressed about my job and it will suck and I'll be sad, but it's so much like, if I ever have a major life event, so like my dad was in the hospital a while back and my mom more recently has been in the hospital with like heart problems. And like, it sounds sort of awful, but like, it really wasn't that hard to deal with. Like, I know some of my friends have like, their parents have been in the hospital and it's just like tore them up. And like, I almost was like worried because I didn't react at all.
You've had a lot of experience at loss though.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, I felt kind of like a freak because I didn't react, you know, and I felt sad, but I wasn't like, it's like my parents are old. They're like 77 or something, mm-hmm. You know, like it's, if they die, like, it'll suck. Like, I'll feel bad because, you know, I wish my kid could have known their grandparents, but like, I didn't know my grandparents and it was okay.
Right.
Like, you know, and they're old, like they've done a lot of cool things. Like, it's not a big deal, you know? And so for me, like that sort of balancing effect has been,
we'll try to have them not listen to that portion of this podcast.
They would be okay with it. My dad would actually like be very proud that I said that. Because he constantly, like, they don't, when they have health problems, they don't even tell us for like weeks. Like, they're like, they just don't want us to know because they don't want us to feel bad. And I just, like, they probably would be happy that, like, they know that I want the best for them and I want them to be happy. Yes. But, like, they know that they're old. So, I mean,
it's a reality you have to face.
Yeah. And, like, the fact that I've faced death twice in really big ways already, in two completely different ways. Like, one, my life changes in an instant of a phone call. And the other, it's like this 3-year long hell, you know, like, I feel like there's not much that could like really shake me. I mean, I think if I lost my kid or my wife, that would pretty much shake me again. And I would like have a really, it would be like that growing period again of like hardest time of my life. Mm-hmm. But like saving those two things, like even if another family member died, it would be really hard, but I still think I could like deal with it, you know? And like that's a really good thing and a really scary thing. Like I feel a little bit like a robot sometimes. Yeah.
Did your healing emotionally help you get married, or did your getting married help you heal emotionally?
Well, it's funny. Like I was not going to get married. Like I went back to look at this blog post I wrote in like 2006, right? Or 2007, right after my brother died. And it was like I wrote my goals for the future, and I wrote like, you know, like I think like fifth or sixth on the list was like, at some point I'm going to start dating and get married. And like, I wasn't even thinking about that at all. Right. Like I had moved to Boston actually. And my wife and I went to college together when I was in high school. Like I was 16 and she was 18 or 19. And, so we had known each other cause we had mutual friends and like we'd hung out. But we both moved to Boston together, and I had already started dealing with my brother's loss and like I was starting to like move on. But then when my wife, then just my friend was there, like I really like unloaded a lot of that problem on her. Like she was a nurse and I had a really big problem with healthcare because of my sister. Like I thought it was kind of a sham, and like, you know, my sister was treated for 3 years and she just got worse. And I think that she felt worse because of the treatments, you know, and that was really hard to deal with. And then my friend slash wife eventually comes and we start talking, and she helped me deal with that a ton. And I wasn't looking to get married or to date or any of that stuff. I was like, it was like the furthest thing from my mind. And I started just like, we hung out every day for like 2 months. And I just realized that like, I'm in love with this person and we're going to get married. And it was seriously as simple as that. It was like, you know, it was this process of like healing through finding a best friend. And It didn't feel forced, or like, it just felt like it happened the way it was supposed to happen. You know, everything just kind of worked out, and it was, and like, that's how I ultimately was like, okay with my brother's death, you know? So. Mm-hmm.
If you were giving a commencement address, this is your opportunity to do it virtually. What would be your best advice? What would you say?
I'd say like, watch other people's commencement addresses. Like I've watched some really good ones lately. With like Steve Jobs, and he gave a commencement at Stanford a couple years ago. And I watched something that wasn't a commencement address, but it hit me like a commencement address. It was from Ira Glass. So like, I'm just going to steal both of their like knowledge. Like Ira Glass said this amazing thing that like, you know, there's a period between when you start something and when you're good at something that you're awful. And the reason why you like get into a creative career is because you have taste and you love the thing that you are going to do. So in my case, I loved television. There's something about watching TV that I loved. And eventually it became, there's something about reading blogs that I loved. And like I read Engadget all day, every day, and I loved it. So I wanted to do it. I wanted to be part of Engadget because I loved it so much. But like when I started, I was horrible, like horrible at everything, horrible at audio production, even though I was a podcast producer and I totally hustled my way on to Engadget. Like horrible at writing, horrible at being on task, horrible at getting things done. Like I was horrible at all these things. And the only way that like you get good at something is through doing a large volume of work. Mm-hmm. So like rather than do something once a month, you have to do it like all day, every day to get good at it.
Yeah.
And in my case, like that meant, you know, when I started doing that show, Tech Check Daily, the daily thing after my brother died, it meant like the reason why I did that show is because I wanted to do a show every day and just get through a body of work and like get better and learn and grow. And so I did it every day. And I was, and eventually like I got really good at producing that show every day. It used to take me like 8 hours. Like I would work, I used to work the morning show at a TV station. So I would work like 3:30 to 12:30. I would get home and I would start preparing for my show. And I'd usually tape my show at like 7 and then I would post it and then I'd go to bed. And that was essentially like all I did. Eventually, like I got so that I could finish my show by like, you know, 4 and then by like 3. And then when I did TechV, I did my entire show live and it was still good quality, you know? And so that going through that body of work and like learning, eventually I got really good at it, you know? And I think like a lot of people want a shortcut or like a how-to book, or they want to like read some documentation somewhere. And like, that doesn't help you. Like you just have to do whatever you think that you love. You need to do it and do it every day. Like you love it. Like if you're a basketball player, the way you get in the NBA is by doing a large volume of work, playing basketball every day. The way you, like, if you want to be Katie Couric, like you don't get it by like going to school and like having people tell you what to do. You get it by doing. And so, I mean, that's like the biggest thing. The other thing I'd say is that like life experiences are only applicable in retrospect. So like optimize your life for serendipity. So like when you, like, I had no idea going to college when I was 16 that would let me meet my wife. You know, I had no idea that doing Tech Check Daily would lead to working at CNET, which I loved. I had no idea that doing TechV would get me into startups. Like they weren't even related. I work now with like one of the most important startup companies in the world. I work with Y Combinator doing their audio video stuff. And I mean, I'm learning so much there. It's, you know, like my life has been, right now my life is a great example of like serendipity and learning, and there's no execution. Like I feel like in my life, I haven't done anything that matters, you know, like I've learned a lot and I've done little things that matter, but I haven't done my life's work. I haven't like made an impact. I haven't, like, I feel unfulfilled. And so like I'm able to look back at all my life experiences and say like, look at how good all these life experiences are, and they made me smarter. And now I'm like at this inflection point where I'm like, okay, I want, after Castfire, like Castfire is what I'm doing for the foreseeable future, like probably the next like 2 or 3 years. After Castfire, like I'm sick of learning. You know, like I've learned a lot. Like I really want to do that thing that like impacts the world and like changes things. And I'm able to like, I've done all these serendipitous things that have been really good and I've learned a lot and I feel like I'm in a really position to contribute. So now I want to contribute. And like if I, you know, you can only go learning for so long and then you actually have to do. And that's where I'm at. Like now, like this is not a college commencement address as much now, but like just personally, like I'm ready. Like I want to build something that makes everyone's life better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I found, like, I know the area. Like I want to make it so that anyone can create TV quality productions without a TV budget. You know, so like the show you're doing now, like I see you on webcam. This is just being recorded as audio. Like, wouldn't it be cool if this could look like it was Charlie Rose, you know, or like this could look like it was CNN or, you know, any of those things. Like I would love it so that anyone who wants to could create that, like they wouldn't be limited by a budget. You know, like, and like they wouldn't be like distributions figured out, like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Like if you have a good idea, it will travel. Now it's like, how do you get your idea so that it looks more than just like amateur hour, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really like, I want to make it so that we can have a new class of content creators who don't have money, but are still professional, you know? So, I mean, that's where I'm going. And, you know, if hopefully when I was actually giving a college commencement address, like I would have executed on that and like people would identify with the product that I made or the project that I started or whatever. They'd be like, oh yeah. Like, you know, I heard about the news in Egypt from that software that you did, you know, like that's what I want. I want to do that. So, yeah.
My last question is actually an opportunity to tell a story. I think of this sort of as my interviews as 10 questions and a story.
Sure.
So this is your opportunity to give me the story part. What question should I have asked to get you to tell the story you're about to tell me?
Wow. I don't know. That's a really hard question. You're gonna have to edit out some silence for a second. All the only stories I could think of are really embarrassing and I don't want to tell them. So I don't think you could ask me any questions that I really want to tell.
Well, that seems fair.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, the thing about me is like, I'm a really open person and like, I'll tell anyone like anything that is not the like two stories that I'm thinking of that involve bodily functions. I'll tell like pretty much any story that like nothing's off limits for me. Like, you know, my brother's death, like totally, I feel like it helps people to understand like how I view that stuff. And
let me ask you this. What's it like being a father?
What's like being a father, man? Honestly, like not much has changed yet. And that's so weird and counterintuitive to what everyone says. Like Eli is 8 weeks old today. And like the only thing that has changed is like I wake up more often and like I just take care of him. But like I don't feel this like sea change yet that everyone, like so many people are like, oh, your life is going to be totally different, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, I guess. I mean, the thing that I think will be really different is once Eli can start to like relate and have, he has like a little personality that he's just developed over the last like week and a half where like he's kind of stubborn a little and that's kind of funny. But once he has like a real personality, that's when I feel like I'll actually have a real answer to that question. You know, like I feel love for him, but I don't know. My life doesn't feel different. I don't like, I have this guy to take care of who like my wife and I refer to him as the most adorable stroke victim. Like he can't like do anything. He just like, he just sits there and like can't talk to you. He can just cry. And like, we like taking care of him, but like, I can't wait for, I mean, he just started smiling. Like he'll smile on occasion and that's awesome. We know that it's coming. And so right now we're kind of like, we just can't wait for like, I can't wait. Like I really like kids a lot and I've never had to deal with a kid this young, which is kind of different. No one does. Like you never have to deal with a newborn unless you're like a parent. And I've had nephews and nieces forever since I was like three. So I've had a really big extended family and I can't wait until I can, you know, play with my kid and like, you know, watch TV together and watch funny shows or, you know, all that stuff that like really builds that relationship. So, yeah.
Well, thanks, Randall, for joining me. I appreciate your time and your comments. It's been very interesting.
Cool. Thanks. I at first, when you asked me to do this interview, I was like, well, I'm a nobody, but hopefully it'll be interesting. So,
well, nobody and fame is sort of levels, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're the only kid in the class who has a particular skill or a particular look, that you're famous. So
yeah, maybe it's like that. Maybe it's like that.
What level of fame do you see yourself being at?
I mean, really, like I'm known to a very specific sliver of the population. Like, I would say maybe like 200 people know who I am and those 200 people like me, but like, I'll tell you this story. This just uncorked one that's really hilarious. I went to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade like in 2008, maybe. I don't remember. Some year. And I was taking pictures with my camera, which I was on loan for because I was reviewing it. And we were just like hanging out with people who were on the sidewalk with us. And I was taking pictures. And somehow I said something to the people we were with that like, oh, this camera is doing pretty good. I'm kind of surprised. And the other person inferred that I was a reviewer. And he's like, wait, don't you like do some technology thing? And I was like, oh my gosh, are you really recognizing me right now? And then it gets worse. So then he's like, wait, you've done CNET, whatever. And then he asked me for my autograph.
Oh boy.
And that was like this point where I'm like, oh my gosh. Like I didn't know what to say. I just started laughing. I was like, why? Like what benefit would my autograph give you? As like, you know who I am. Out of this entire city, maybe like five other people know who I am. How would this autograph profit you anything? Anyway, so I was just really like taken aback.
Did you give him an autograph?
I actually didn't because I was laughing so hard. And he just kind of didn't really follow up with it. I was just like, oh yeah, it's cool, whatever. And like, I gave him my email address and I haven't talked to him ever since, but it was like a surreal, weird experience. So like, I don't know. If I ever got to, if anyone ever asks for my autograph again, I'll probably be like, people have said when I've told this story, people have been like, you're a jerk. Like, why would you not give me an autograph? I'm like, it wasn't on purpose. Like, it was so weird. So anyway, that's my good story.
Why don't you start signing them to Steve Jobs and see if that
exactly.
helps?
Exactly. That's what I'll just sign them as other famous people. So they'll actually get something. There you out go. Of it. So, yeah.
Good story. Thanks, Randall.
All right, cool. Thanks.